Okay, we're in James chapter 3, and we'll review briefly the first five verses that we looked at last week, and then pick up the next six or so verses. James begins, and this section says, "Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we will incur a stricter judgment." One of the things we didn't talk about last week was if anybody had different translation there other than become. So the NIV has presume. What does yours have? Become. So the word here would be one that, you know, has more of a basic meaning of become. It can be used in the sense of to be born or to be made, to happen or to take place, or, you know, in that sense of, you know, if something's changing in nature to become something. In English, the word presume has the idea of to undertake without leave or clear justification, to accept or assume, especially with confidence. So maybe the NIV translators were attempting to convey that these, you know, the warning here is directed to those that are posing as teachers in the sense that they're not taking the position seriously. They're not, you know, they're being seeing the role too lightly. But the basic meaning is to become. So if you see presume, you know, you should not presume to be teachers in the sense of that you're not really a teacher, but you presume to be a teacher. That might miss it, but if you understand presume in the sense of that you're undertaking the role without clear justification, without seriously exploring it, then that might convey it. So it starts off in the first 1.5 verses, this warning to those who would teach. You know, one of the questions, and we kind of talked about a little bit last week, is that's not super clear, but it would seem by structure that this warning is also connected to what follows with about the tongue. And so while it doesn't seem that warning is exclusively saying that you shouldn't become a teacher, you know, because you might not have control of your tongue, but I think there's some connection about that sense of responsibility or recognition. Then in the next section, the last part of verse 2 and through the first part of verse 5, it's really talking about the tongue is very difficult to control. In one sense, it's a very small thing, and it can control the whole thing, such as a bit in a horse's mouth or a rudder on a ship, but it's in that sense that it can be difficult to control. Jesus talks about that, or speaking of Jesus' character in Peter, he says, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. Jesus makes a couple of statements about, you know, it's not what goes in, but what comes out. And so maybe, you know, in a general sense, as we talk about this, you know, saying about the tongue, you could say, you know, questions to ask ourselves, is it true? Is it necessary? Is it helpful? And, generally I wouldn't want to say as a society, because I don't think as a society, they don't care about any of them, doesn't seem. But those with integrity, you know, if you could use that word here to maybe make a distinction, probably pretty happy to settle for the first one. You know, is it true? So if we say things that are true, then it's okay. And we looked at the passage in Ephesians last week that, you know, we'd put something else, you know, is it necessary to say it and is it helpful? Those really change things. You know, I kind of at one point, and it, you know, here, conflict hadn't been a big issue, and you don't have these, to my knowledge, we hadn't had a lot of people that feel real compelled to confront everyone. But I remember one time in Brenham deciding that, while there's, really is a place biblically, to confront people, but it was almost like it should be the rule. If confronting is easy, then you shouldn't be the one doing it. And because it came, that idea, well, it's the truth. And that became, some of those people, that's their whole deal. Well, it was, it was the truth, or I was right. But the whole idea of, was it necessary? Did it benefit anything? Did it help? And, now it just became, it was the truth, I was right. And that fails at some level. There are certain things that, we're not trying to say that, I saw somebody shoot somebody, and I could have told the police it was the truth, but I didn't think it would help the guy that did the shooting, and I didn't think it'd be beneficial to him, so I'm not telling anybody. I mean, that, obviously that's not the kind of stuff you're talking about. Yeah, I mean, that's not the categories you're talking about, but it is in that sense of, building up and beneficial. And so, so I was thinking, there was a person that, I think maybe it was a photocopier or something, and somebody had used it. And so then the first something, and so it was like, well, was that for a personal thing? Yeah, and so what did you pay, the 10 cents or something? It was kind of, the kind of confrontational type, and so it would have been a dime or 50 cents or whatever it was had been. Well, so is the person technically right? Yeah. But is that really what it was, is that really why that's there? I mean, it really was, we have a church school, and so you have that there. You don't really have it there because of the church. You have that there because of the school. And, all the other people that are there. And, what are you accomplishing when you do that? So the problem with that, there's not really any great way to intervene because the person is, quote, right. But, these other things, if you could go on and say, well, was it really necessary? And was it helpful? Well, yeah, it was helpful. It got us 50 cents. I mean, yeah. Of course, it cost us, thousands of dollars because that person's not coming to church here anymore. You know what I mean? There's some level. So those are hard. So it's not going to be beneficial. These things are not beneficial in a way of setting up guidelines for somebody else. They're guidelines for ourselves. That's where we should be, because this doesn't help the other person. But for us, we could be saying, is it true? Is it necessary? Is it helpful? That's one of the things. Now, I wouldn't say that's the only thing about the tongue here, but that's one area that we could maybe help us in. The next part, if we start in the last part of chapter, or the last part of verse 5, and I don't know if it, your Bible, some Bibles, the New American Standard, breaks this out as a separate paragraph, but I do think it's a different section. It says, see how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire and a very in the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. So he gets pretty strong all of a sudden. But I think, and I'm not sure what really happened to Smokey the Bear. He just kind of disappeared off there, being used. I mean, they still have the symbol around, but they don't really use it, I don't know if they decided it didn't work, but I always grew up with the Smokey the Bear deal. Only you can prevent a forest fire, And now, so is that who came? And that we were just too enlightened of a society. Those that came under us were just too enlightened. There's a great force is set aflame by such a small fire. I remember seeing it, and it didn't result in a forest fire, but I remember when we were in the mountains once, a lightning struck a tree up on the side of the mountain, and we could see it. And, you know, and it started burning. Now, because of its location and stuff, it's on the side, and there's a lot of rocks, it didn't result in a fire. But fires are started by lightning. But in a relative sense of the whole forest, that lightning strike catching that one tree on fire is a very, very small area compared to that forest. And so, you know, so a whole fire, you know, a whole forest burns down, but it was a very small fire that started it. But, you know, the part he says after that is so strong. And the tongue is a fire. Okay, we get that. And very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body. So that's kind of that where Jesus was talking about a little bit. And sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. That becomes pretty strong. You know, the wording there is very strong. Well, it's an interesting iniquity. The whole world of iniquity, is communicated through the tongue. Is the kind of idea. The tongue that sets on fire, is that sense of, you know, it starts in the, you know, it you know affects the world. It's saying, but it starts in a person's heart. You know, inside. You know, it defiles the whole body, that is, the whole person. That's similar to what, you know, Jesus was talking about there. The course of life, you know, it spreads a destructive path. It leaves that path of destruction. You know, maybe that's, you know, when you've, if you've been to areas where you've seen fires, whether it's a grass fire or a fire in the mountains, I mean, you see the area, you know, that's burnt out. You know, it, maybe it's in that sense of how they escalate. Words can calm down situations. Unfortunately, most times words escalate them. You know, they can't. There are, you know, and there's some proverbs that talk about, you know, fitting word and right word and all these things. But there's also the ones that that work the other way. Proverbs 25:11 says, "Like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances." You know. So that's the opposite of escalating, you know, when you, there's something beautiful, you know, apples of gold on settings of silver, you know. I mean, you've got this beautiful tray of, you know, these beautiful art, you know, golden art apples, and that's like that word that's just the right word. Or Proverbs 15:1 says, "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." You know, you would think that in, you know, been a pastor for 25 years plus, I could have one, more than one illustration of this. And actually the illustration came right before I became a pastor, is when we were moving to Brenham. So that's pretty bad. I really don't have any great illustration. You know, a gentle answer turns away wrath. You know, we were moving, loading our U-Haul trailer to move to Brenham, and we had started that evening, and I guess had some more stuff. I'm not exactly sure, but I know the truck, after, you know, having the ramp out there and everything, that just put the ramp up and backed it all the way up against the curb. And so it's, you know, we were on the very end apartment, and so it's sticking out into the drive, but it's not blocking anything because we're at the very end and you could go around it. But it's parked, I guess you'd call it illegally, you know. I mean, I don't know if you can, in an apartment, whether legal, illegal, you know, but it's parked not where it should be, and they've towed things off. You know, we had our car got towed once when there wasn't any parked places, and I parked somewhere, and this guy in the middle of the night starts beating on the truck, inside the truck, you know, So open the door, and he's out there, and probably, I'm sure he had something other than water to drink. And but he is upset, and he's upset because the truck is sticking out there, and his car got towed like a week ago, you know, when it wasn't parked right. And I don't remember, you know, that's obviously been a long time ago. But I remember saying something very, you know, calm and gentle, and just his whole, everything changed. And I don't know, I said, "You jerk, you don't, let's stop, I'm going to call the cops." I don't remember, Rob.
Quietly and calmly.
Yeah, I said it very quietly and calmly. "You are a jerk, you're acting like a jerk, and I know this guy at Kansas State, I'm going to call him, he's going to come beat you up if you don't, you know, but anyway." But no, I don't remember what I said, but I just remember everything changed, you know, as we talked about. But yeah, no, I didn't want to go too, you know, didn't want to acknowledge that you hadn't been born. You were just, you know, you're just, you know, a figment of somebody's imagination at that point. But it talks about it's being set on fire by hell. Now, hell's, the word's Gehenna, and it's literally, it's a ravine. It's south of Jerusalem, and it's where, you know, it's a trash dump. It's where they, you know, it was just a, you know, pretty much a living, consuming fire. It just, you know, as things like that will do, if you're continually adding fuel to it, it just is going to stay hot, and you throw other things on it, and it's going to catch on fire, and it just kind of continue to burn. So when they talked about hell in the New Testament, it, that's the image. You know, you've got this incinerator, so to speak, out there. But, you know, with that as the more literal reference, then it became figuratively. So we get the literal reference to this place, but that then it has that figurative, that it's a future punishment. And and this is the only use of that word outside the Gospels in the Bible, New Testament. And it's the, you know, the ultimate source of destructive words is Satan, the father of lies. And so it's probably that connection there. You know, but, you know, you can see that he makes a very strong connections here, that when the tongue becomes that destructive force, it defiles the person. It's destructive to, you know, the environment around, and it and the association would be, you know, with something that's separated from God. It moves on, and as an explanation, verse 7 says, "For every species of beast and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race." So we, you know, at this point, saying, you know, there's, you know, there is that aspect from Genesis where man would have dominion over the animals. So we're not saying that there's this absolute control over all animals, but various animals, you know, are tamed. There's a sense of control over things, but no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. You know, and that's the thing that gets hard, that it's that quick response. It's that intentional response. You know, it can either be not thinking. It can be very intentional, but it can be very destructive. And, you know, sometimes you see this. I mean, I definitely don't think it's, you know, unique to kids at all. I think there may be a little more awareness by adults, not all adults, but most adults. Whereas kids, you know, teenagers or something, just very prone to respond very quickly. And you really see it there. You know, it's almost like, you know, when it talks about a restless evil, they will just respond instead of thinking about the situation. And, you know, it's just that response. I'm going to be defiant. I'm going to be there. But he goes from there, and this is where he really drives this home, I think, in it. You know, because up to this point, you know, as you're reading through, it's almost one of those, it's been so strong, you can sit here and go, yeah, that's Jim. Yeah, I see Jim there. Yeah, that's Deborah. You know, you can just be seeing everybody else, but then all of a sudden, verse 10, it goes, from the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. And you realize, yeah. So I curse this person, and I bless this. And that's just where we are so often. And, you know, it's so interesting, you know, how words get phrased and how they're developed. And then they have this, they you know, it becomes a phrase that nobody necessarily is thinking about. I mean, it doesn't have any literal meaning anymore. It has a meaning, but it has no literal meaning. You know, most, quote, swear words don't have any literalness to them anymore. You know, they're just used. They become, it's profanity used for the sake of profanity. But when you think of some of those, or the one I'm saying, you know, thinking of at the moment, and, you know, in separate words, and, you know, if you separate these and use them in separate sentences, then it's not a profane word. And you put them together, it's, you know, very profane. You know, so, you know, you have God damn. Well, when you think about that literally, that is a very specific curse asking the highest power in the universe to bring cursing upon somebody. Now, when people use that, is that what they're saying? No. Most of the people using it, we'd claim, you know, I shouldn't say most, a lot of the people using it would not even have any acknowledgement there is a God. So it becomes just a phrase. But you know what? You think about that in the sense of cursing. You know, here is this curse. You know, we might, you know, think of shows that have some kind of voodoo in them and go, oh, this is so dumb, you know. That's what you're literally doing, you know, with that kind of phraseology. You're asking God to curse them. And then you turn around and maybe ask God to bless somebody. Or you bless God. And that's what he's saying. I mean, the tongue can do that. One person can do that. And he uses that as an illustration. He says, does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Man, that would be an exciting, you know, faucet to turn on in your kitchen, wouldn't it? Water's not drinkable today, you know. And sometimes, you know, I guess you could press this, though it's not really a fountain, but I remember in Brenham, we had lake water, and it came from a lake that was about 30 miles away. And there are certain times, you know, about once, it didn't happen every year, but there are certain times in the year when, you know, you really know what happens, but it's when the change of temperature occurs, and I forget exactly how that works, you know, but yeah, but I mean, I forgot how it, what is it, heat too fast, or so anyway, it causes all the bottom stuff to come to the top, and so then you get all that in your water, and that's really bad, you know. But that would be almost an illustration of what a fountain would be like if it was, you know, if it had bitter and sweet water. But you know, I mean, that's not natural, obviously, in a sense of a fountain or, you know, a spring water or something. I mean, if it's good water, it's good water. It doesn't just do that. And just how crazy it is. Or he says, can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives? Or a vine produce figs? So, you know, you go out to your, you know, your apple tree, one day and you get an apple and you go out the next day and say, oh, I was expecting an orange today. I mean, come on. But yet, somebody could bless you and then you see them tomorrow and they could curse you. And that's, it's a very intriguing illustration that James uses. So, really there's, these questions there, or ends, can salt water produce fresh? And, so there is that place to pause and say, okay, how do you use your tongue? What's the purpose? The basketball coach at BA, the head girls coach, he's, I haven't been around, millions of coaches in my life, but I've been around some coaches. And he is one of the most impressive coaches I've ever been around. And it's, at that level, let's say that, anybody that's coaching at that level would have the same knowledge base. There's probably not a big difference in knowledge base at those levels, let's say. And that's probably true. But, the rapport he has with the kids, he's very demanding. And yet, there's a softness at the same time. It's really, it's really incredible. He can be extremely demanding. And with, because he's been at a couple of my ninth grade games, and then at the same time he's going, sweetheart, da da da, and there's this gentleness there, and that's not always, that's not always the case. It's the sarcasm, it's the meanness, it's the, and this coach that was at Kansas, assuming the reports were true. There didn't seem to be a whole lot of denial that, people coming up and saying, oh, no, that didn't ever happen. You got some people come up saying, oh, we like them. But you didn't have anybody saying, I never heard that kind of stuff. But there was just a meanness in the words where if you didn't hear it, it would be, kid's brother from some city had been shot, in a gang-related thing, his younger brother, and it was like, he makes a mistake on the field. It's just, hey, if you don't start playing better, send you back home and let the homies shoot you. That's just mean. Well, that's the same, but yet, maybe on the next play, you're saying, hey, that's wonderful. And it, and the challenge is not, to be critical of somebody else. See, that's the easy part, to say, oh, they shouldn't be that. But to realize that James isn't saying this. Some people are that way. That's where we all face this, that we can bless, we can curse. What a challenge it is then. It's a real challenge. And, and you put it this, it ought not to be that way. So that becomes the challenge for us. Well, thoughts, insights? Did you get carried away, Rob? And then you realized, then you decided you might want to ask a question or make a statement of insight. Okay, we'll let you go turn it off then. We'll move to prayer request. Now you intimidated them all now. They don't want to.